Thank you so much for listening to this pre-recorded episode of Pub Talk Live. To find out more about Pub Talk Live, including how you can watch live, go to pubtalk.live. Thank you so much to my Patreon podcast sponsors, Brenda Drake and the Shape of a Star podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the final regular Pub Talk Live. If you don't know, I'm your host, Sarah Nicholas. I am a young adult author, and I am now an assistant agent as well under the name Sarah Fisk. This is not confusing at all. And I wanted to do something extra special for y'all for the last episode. And so I got three agents to come, and we're going to talk all about a thing that really confuses a lot of writers, contract terms and what they mean and what's normal and what's not normal. And so we're going to go ahead and get started. Feel free to drop your questions in the comments. And I have a whole bunch of questions as well to get started. Okay. Sorry, someone just walked in here. Okay. I'm going to have everyone introduce themselves. Thank you, Laura. Yes. I gathered three agents. I didn't gather myself. So, okay. I'm going to have everyone introduce themselves. Caitlin, if you want to get started.
Yes. Hi. So I'm Caitlin Johnson. I'm a literary agent at Bill Castro Literary Agency, and I've been in the business since about 2016, going from intern up to literary agent. And I take pretty much upper middle grade YA and select adult.
And we'll have Natasha go next. We'll just go around the clock.
Okay. I'm Natasha Morris. I'm at the Tobias Literary Agency with Sarah. I have been in the business probably since about 2011 as an intern, but 2017 is when I became an agent. I do all things Kitlet.
Hi, I'm Jessica Fellman. I am an agent with the Jennifer Lyons Literary Agency. I've been in the business officially since 2015. I've been agenting since 2016. And before I started agenting, I was actually a writer myself. I have an MFA, so I've seen both sides.
Yeah, awesome. Danny said, I'd like to point out I left an Instagram live with a Teen Wolf actor to make sure I would be here. Danny is also, he volunteered to moderate comments today. So if we get any like spam comments or whatever, he's going to take care of that. So thank you, Danny.
Thank you.
All right. So I wanted to start with this question mainly because there's been so much chatter on Twitter the last couple weeks, months, years about this. And so this is why we're starting here. There's really no reason why, except for that. So how are advance payments typically split up? And then how does it differ for like one book versus a two book deal or three book deal? Whoever wants to go first.
I mean, I'll just jump in first and say that sometimes it differs depending on the type of project from top down, whether it's nonfiction, like a big prescriptive title or a kid's picture book. It's very different, but I usually like to say the standard is you're going to get at least three payments. Probably it would be great if you could get two. Sometimes they'll try to stretch it to four.
Yeah, we definitely try to. We really try to. So when the contract's finalized and we sign the contract and they send the first payment, and then either upon acceptance of the book, which we're going to talk about later, or publication day. But I'm sure, as Natasha's going to talk about next, is that it's definitely not been sticking to two. It's definitely not been the norm lately.
Yeah, no. I would say probably in the last year or so, it's definitely switched over to four payments. And I've even had some creatives tell me they want four payments instead of two, particularly when it comes to my graphic novel illustrators. They don't want to wait for an acceptance of their art, which could be 3 years down the road from when we signed a contract. They want it broken up to have smaller money. But that four payments can be really kind of annoying when you're a text author and you're looking at signing of a contract, delivery of art, publication, like a third draft, like however a publisher wants to break those payments up, those four payments, you're looking at that and you're like, why is this being spread up like this? It doesn't make sense. And it really doesn't make sense when it's a picture book, when it's a 500 word text. So,
so I get that when you sign a contract, when you acceptance of the manuscript on publication, what would the fourth milestone be?
It depends. Like Natasha said, I think that some of them are doing like when the second, when a paperback comes out, if you come out in hardcover or a year after publication. I've seen some that are like the year mark after your publication date, you get it, or when we do the paperback, or when a second printing happens, if it happens. So it depends.
Yeah, I have one that is signing first draft, final final draft acceptance, publication. Really? So technically,
that's nice.
Yeah, first I have worked really hard to get that in there.
Dang, you want to do that?
Yeah, on a proposal, I worked really hard to get on that. For my illustrators, it can be signing sketches, inks, colors. When their final art is accepted, to try and get that all done as much as possible. And then for my picture book illustrators, publication usually is the fourth one for sure.
Yeah, we're trying to keep it that. It's a lot have been trying to push it to a year after publication, which is something that agents are definitely trying to fight. Mm-hmm. Some, like as Natasha said, the illustrators, like it makes some kind of sense because then they have some guaranteed income coming in. But say you sell out your advance when you publish, now you have to wait a year to still get more money because you don't start earning your it's very confusing and just not necessary.
Yeah, and it also, because especially when it comes to bonuses, which I know we haven't even scratched the surface out, there might be times when I put in a contract, oh, if I've earned out my advance within 1 year of publication, you're going to pay me an additional x amount of money, which I consider to be fairy money. It doesn't exist until it's in my bank. It's just math. It's just floating in the ether. If you're not going to even pay me money until a year after publication for the last part of my advance, but I've already earned out that advance within that like year, how does that bonus come into play? So some of this is still things to look at going forward. So that's why I don't like the year at the end. I like publication work done and then I can earn out a bonus. So
I don't do any illustration really. Most of my contracts are text-based. And typically from the big five, I see them with that fourth payment. They always come in with that fourth payment. And I've seen five. I've seen where they have signing, DNA, pub, 12 months post-pub, and then like another 12 months post that post-pub. And I just was like, no.
That's absolutely ridiculous. I would be so, so angry.
Yeah, I mean we got rid of that one, but
This isn't really a question, but why would they call it an advance if you aren't getting it in advance?
I have asked the same thing. It's no longer an advance, people.
Yeah. So we have a question that was kind of also my question. If the contract was for a series, will it be broken up by book? I know especially there was a tweet that went around last week. The author was saying it was five payments, but then they clarified that it was for two books. And so it was like broken up with the books. And so how does that look if someone signs like a 2 or 3 book contract? Are there payment dates then for the, you know, second and third book?
Yes. I just pulled up my document because I'm negotiating one right now. So yeah, basically like your advance is like this one number and half of it is on signing the contract itself. And it's just that. And then the next like portion thereof, however many they're portioning you out, can be like the delivery / acceptance of book one. Then you don't get money again till you've finished book two and they've accepted that one, which could be over a year, 2 years. And then final payment could be publication of like book one and then publication of like, depending how they're splitting it.
But don't forget, they may also be like, hey, we want to give you some money on if you turn in a proposal and you have to work that proposal, which is then like a synopsis, a really detailed synopsis. And that might be getting really in the woods. And so they do that as well. Also, side note, I love it when my friends succeed. So go Caitlin for that.
Thank you.
And so, yeah, you could get like a big chunk of money for your signing. And then it's like, okay, you're going to get the small portion here for your outline for book two. You're going to get it at delivery of book one. Now you're going to do it delivery of book two. And we're also going to do, like, they can break it up however they want because they may have paid you.
Yeah. Say you get like a $50,000 advance. You might not see the entire advance for 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still, you know, working full time and hopefully trying to get other things published, because obviously $50,000 does not last you 4 years.
Yeah, that gets into maybe the whole financials of publishing. Yeah, the whole financials of publishing. That's a fun other separate conversation. Yeah.
There is a guy on TikTok. His name is Brian, and he works in the finance department of a major publishing house. And so he talks a lot about like the finance side of things, which I find really interesting. But
don't give me logical reasons for being on TikTok.
he speaks really fast, which I love. I naturally speak very quickly. I have to slow myself down when I'm doing stuff like this. And I just love it because it's like he's speaking at my speed. But one of the things that he said that was, I thought was really funny, like I never really thought of it this way. He's like, they break out the payments like that so that the author will actually do the work. And they can make sure they're not paying the author before they do the work.
And fair, I was like, but I think 3 payments is enough to make my author do the work.
Yeah, then that 6 month out payment doesn't make any sense, right? Or 1 year out payment. All right, so I had asked people on Patreon to submit questions ahead of time. Danny submitted one. And Natasha, I know you know quite a bit about this. We'll see. I don't know about the other two. Do you initially have to add in if you want producer rights in a book deal, if it's ever made into a movie? How do people become producers of their work or consulted, et cetera?
I was like, does anybody else want to take this before I go to it?
If you know more, I think you should take it away.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when we sell your book rights, we are usually holding certain rights. We're going to sell, like, I traditionally am holding calendar, merchandising, theme park, film, dramatic, non-dramatic, depending on the publisher, sometimes audio if I'm lucky, for serial. There's certain things that I can get and I know to get. And that's also why you want an agent. We know which rights are valuable, which ones are in the chess match that is a contract negotiation, which ones we can leverage out. With wanting to be a producer, that actually comes into play when you are optioning your work to a producer or to a film company or financier. You put that into that negotiation. You want to be an EP. Do you want a fee to be an EP? Do you want consulting rights? That's a fee. Do you want back-end merchandising royalties? That's a fee. So if you want to be a producer on your eventual movie, that goes into actually the producing deal you make as a book option. It also doesn't guarantee you any creative control, though, because movie deals are their own monster beast and their own thing, but you can actually put it into a movie deal that you will get EP credit and be known as the executive producer.
Yeah, in my experience, they usually say they put their best effort to get a producer credit for the author. Like say if a graphic novel, they put that in there saying if you get optioned, we're putting that, they'll do best efforts to try to get you that. If somebody options your work, you can then tell them, this is something I really want. You want to buy this, let's make it work. So that's really how you get the producer. It's not a given. And it also doesn't mean you're going to be like, I want this person as the lead and that's that. That's not how that works. So it's very subjective, but it doesn't happen in your actual like book contract. And it doesn't happen in your agent contract. It happens when you are being optioned for film, which is like a completely different discussion.
Jessica, did you have something to add?
I don't think so. I think you guys covered it.
Danny said theme park isn't one I'd have guessed. that as well, I live in Orlando, so I would have guessed that, but there was actually this thing going around that was like, what is your most unrealistic author goal? And I was like, theme park. And it has to have good food because let's see. Jay had a question. Do authors ever have to give any money back?
Oh God. Sometimes. This actually ties in with something I had noted down, Sarah, to one of your other questions. Mm-hmm. The situations where you have to give money back is like if you don't deliver the book, right? If you don't finish the book, if you don't deliver the book, or you deliver it and it's, you know, not the book the publisher is looking for and they reject it, you'll have to pay back money that you've been given, your advance. And like way down the line, you know, if you ever get overpaid royalties, which is maybe getting too into the weeds here.
A little bit, that's getting into like reserves.
I've seen a situation where an author had come to me with a deal she'd done before she was agented, and it had been a profit share, and she had earned a bunch of royalties, which was awesome. But then books had been returned, and her royalty account had fallen into the red. So it can happen.
There are some contracts in the world that I have seen where it's like, if you terminate the book deal with us, you have to pay us back any money that you've still owed us. And I was like, what the heck? That's not right. If you misbehave, morality clauses. If you misbehave, you might have to pay back a portion of your advance that still hasn't earned out. Force majeure hits differently in a pandemic. Like pandemic stuff happened and people couldn't finish books. And that's where it was like, hey, it got delayed. Publishers were like, no, we're nice. We won't cancel book contracts over pandemic related things. It's not covered in your contract. They won't cover it in the contract. But those are the type of things that we now as agents are thinking about. We're thinking about those worst case scenarios. I also now, this is completely side note things. I have to remind people about wills to be like, yo, you have a book now. It's like a baby. You have to assign somebody to be the executor. It's going to need to go in a will. Like, who is in charge of this book thing 75 years later? So those are also the things we think about, because it carries over to heirs. If what if your something happens with your heir misbehaving? And so, yeah, these are the weirdness that I think about now on a daily basis.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot. For those that don't know, force majeure is like if things of the world happen, like say the pandemic and supply chain mess up, supply chain. So like paper is shortage and they can't print what they want to print and stuff like that. But that's kind of our job, is to negotiate those clauses. So morality clauses, we're trying super hard to get as crystal clear as possible. So they're not saying like, oh, you offended this one person and now we're going to just fire you. So we try to do that. We try to make it so that if you terminate the contract because the publisher's in breach, you don't have to pay it back the advances. There's definitely a lot of talk about it and how this can be really dicey, because say you do everything right, you do all the edits, you do your work, and that publisher just decides, you know what, this isn't really what we're wanting. This isn't really the book we wanted to sign. So we're going to back away and we're going to need you to give our money back. And that can be really dicey with, say, marginalized authors who have used that advance to pay off their student loans. Now they're saying, oh, you owe $20,000 back. And you're like, but I did everything right and it's not my fault. So we as agents are trying as hard as we can in the contracts to like finesse that language, though it's very hard to move any of it.
Go ahead, Jessica.
I was just saying, what Caitlin, when you say we as agents are trying, like literally every agent is asking every publisher the same question over and over and over and over again, and just hoping that one of us is just finally the one that gets through, and then we can tell everyone else, hey, I finally got this improvement. Go get it for your people too.
Yeah. And not only that, I feel like especially as American publishing brings more international publishing in, we also have to think about, because the force majeure clause says like if war, government shutdown, any of this applies for the publisher and why the publisher can't do their job. But if we are bringing in international writers, this also should be applying to them, because there's so much that goes on globally that could affect a writer's ability to deliver, could affect a writer's ability to do any of their, to change like the development of their work. And so I think a lot of this is also starting to think about, okay, we need to cover in this way, not just like the narrow focus of saying, oh, the publisher can do their job. We can't do their job because of these pandemic related illnesses or government shutdowns or war. I have a writer who lives in Romania. I have a writer who lives in Mexico. And I was like, what if something happens in those countries that causes them to suddenly have to pack up their computer and hit the road and be like, hey, I'm going to be like 6 months late. Like, we can't just rely on NICE. So.
Yeah. There was an organization that I was working with, and they asked me to take a look at a contract that was related to book rights as an author. And one of the things I was like, well, this isn't right. And they're like, well, don't worry, we won't actually do that. And I'm like, but that's not what the contract says. Like, there's no force behind that. If you're like, oh, but we won't actually do that. Like, no. And like, people should trust us because we're XYZ organization. I'm like, nope. People should not trust you.
And not only that, but like in the end of the day, what'll end up happening in a dispute is that a judge will look at this and say, what does the contract say? What did you legally agree to? And then it doesn't matter if a editor said, oh yeah, we can push this back. We can push this back. A judge will say, your contract says it was due this day. You didn't deliver. They're canceling it. Black and white. You agree to that statement. Unless there's an amendment, like legally, that is the binding document. Nothing else matters.
Yeah.
And there's even rules in the contract that govern how you can change that contract. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. It's also kind of what inspired me to do this workshop, because they're like, well, we had so-and-so author look at it and they said it was fine. I was like, so-and-so author doesn't even look at their own contracts. I know, because they're a friend of mine. Like, okay. So this is another thing that really confuses a lot of writers. What exactly does an option mean? And also relatedly, what does first right of refusal mean? And we're talking about specifically book option, not film TV options.
Okay. Jessica, you can go. I know we're chatterbugs.
That's okay. I am as well, but I like your information. So an option in your book contract is going to be an option on your next book. And publishers would really like it to be just say your next book. And so what we try to do is make it extremely specific as to what they get a quote unquote first look, which is the same thing as an option at. And basically the option clause will say, you get a first look at my next young adult romance novel, and you have 30 days to look at it before I share it with any other editors.
Exactly. And they'll be like, and if we really want to sign it, we then have this negotiation period where we get to try to convince you to let us have it. And if we can't come to an agreement, then the author is allowed to go on their merry way and send it to somebody else. But as Jessica said, we try to get it as specific as possible. So if you wrote a YA fantasy and the option says, we want to see your next book, I'm like, you will see my next YA fantasy. If you want to see my next YA contemporary, we will have to submit it to you. And that will be a whole different ballgame. So they definitely try to do that. And right of first refusal, I always try to get removed. I try to get as right of first look, because right of first refusal means that if they read your book, your next book, and they like it and they want to publish it, they have the right to be to get it. Just if they want it, they get it. If it's right of first look and they want it, you can be like, okay, but now I get to choose if I want to publish it with you. If it's right of first refusal, you don't really have a choice, because you've signed it and said, if you look at it and you want it, you're the first person I go to. So you're the only option here.
And I've seen contracts where if it's right of first look, if it's not first refusal, they'll try to sneak in that matching language at the end where they say, okay, fine. Well, you can go try to get other deals, but then we get another chance to try to offer you the same deal that this other publisher is offering you, and then you have to accept our deal if we match it, which I always strike, because that just, it's just forcing the author to do something they might not want to do. And just
like, if I'm going elsewhere, chances are I didn't want to maybe work with you on this one, or I want you to like be separate. It's Sarah, you're muted.
Thanks. I've definitely had conversations with authors in the past, like author friends who they felt like they were stuck, like they really didn't like the way the publisher treated them. And they're like, I don't want to sign with them. And they would like switch genres or whatever because they didn't want to.
So speaking as a former editorial person, there are ways to game this.
All right.
I don't want to give out all my secrets.
I was going to say, we'll talk about this later.
I was like, I don't want to give out all the secrets.
Yeah.
There are ways to game the option. And your agent should know them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Karen asks, so what's the difference between an option and a book deal with an option and a two book deal?
So a two book deal is, it really depends. It can be, you have submitted a very specific, like, this is the book I'm doing for book one. Here is my proposal for book two. And you've already got that under contract. You already know exactly what you're writing. You've got your due dates. You're set to go. It can also be, you have book one and then they say, okay, we have an untitled whatever. And you're going to have a publication for a book two. They've already bought it. You're going to go, but you have to deliver something that they will accept. An option is just, we may or may not take this. We want the first look at it. We want first crack. And if we reject it, you can go anywhere else. If we take it on, you haven't been able to shop it anywhere else. It's really about market competition there. I will say with two book deals, that tends to be very creative specific. I have some clients who really love having the security of knowing I know where my next, you know, due date is. I have that. And I have some people who are like, I hate having to deliver a project to them because what if they like, I want to do everything and they don't like what I'm giving them. Why won't they just take this? I hate having this overhanging thing over my head. So a two book deal is really something you should talk about with your agent to go for. Options are sometimes things that we can't always get out of in the negotiation process, especially like if it's the auction and they're like, we just paid $250,000 for it. We're going to lock this person in for an option because we want to invest in them again. But two book deals are things that like you're set in. You're not necessarily going to be thrown back out to try again. I'm tired.
No, you're good. And from the publisher side, I mean, that's good because you spoke to like the reason why they do things like options is because they feel like if they've invested in an author and broken them out, especially they want to be able to continue reaping the benefits of helping to break that author out, right? So you know what they're thinking. Danny asked, do you ever feel like a lawyer?
I specifically tell people I am not a lawyer. Yeah. Do not take this as law. Yeah. Go find an entertainment lawyer if you need extra. Like we always are very like clear. We are not lawyers. We are working off of our experience and our mentoring and our research. We are not lawyers.
Yeah. To echo Caitlin, we're not lawyers. In this area, publishing very much is an apprenticeship industry. We learn by knowledge passing. Sarah is working with me at the Tobias Literary Agency. So the knowledge I have, I am passing on to Sarah to make sure that Sarah is prepared for their eventual contracts and to make sure that when they have questions that there's me, there's Matt, there's Lane, there's everybody here at the agency. And it's stressful when we have to go to like film deals and we don't know those terms and we don't know those deals because that's not where we're trained, which makes me then go like, I want to be a lawyer. Yeah. And then I'm like, no, I'd get kicked out on the first day. But I'm not a lawyer. I don't know. One of the things, for instance, that I had to ask our lawyer recently is how do I know when something is fair use versus copyright infringement? And I have to have a whole discussion on that because only a lawyer and the courts can actually really decide on fair use versus copyright infringement. And I'm like sitting over here going, it looks like copyright infringement to me. I don't know how to tell the difference. I know the metrics she's given me, but I don't know. Cause I didn't go to law school. I didn't train that way. So.
Yeah. I took a workshop on, copyright and fair use for the library because it's a question that comes up a lot. And, it's, it's fascinating to me how many people think fair use is like a law, and it's not, it's a defense. It's just like an insanity defense. Like it's a defense used in court. It's not a law.
Well, and especially having illustrators, art gets redone and so often. So like the Cuban Girl's Guide to Tina Tomorrow, that cover, having people make like yarn, having people like when Jane Mount painted that cover, I had to figure out like where does my illustrator's rights, where are those? What can I legally defend against? What is fair use? And so that's where we had that giant conversation with Amanda. And then another one of my illustrators wants to repurpose old photographs. And I'm like, does that count? This is why I, in some ways, I'm like, just leave me to my space that I know I'm comfortable here. Imposter syndrome's not fun.
This is where Etsy just drives you nuts.
Yeah.
I just saw my nostrils flare. You're right.
I love Etsy, but I'm just like, ooh, I don't know if you're really allowed to do that.
Yeah, someone asked one of my author groups recently a very complicated fair use question. I was like, honestly, go find an academic librarian if you have a university near you, because they probably know more about fair use than anyone else, like short of maybe a lawyer that you pay.
That's a good answer. I'm like, Texas Wesleyan is right up the road.
Yeah, yeah, they know a lot. It's that's who taught the class that I took. All right, let's we've like wandered around a little bit. Oh, this is actually kind of related. If an author wants to have several illustrations within a non-graphic, I'm assuming, YA or adult book, will the publisher pay for it?
Yes. The answer is yes. Because and it'll depend two different ways usually. If the illustrator is going to be co-creator in that sense, where they're going to get a royalty element and get copyright, or if they're getting work for hire, they will generally budget for it, which they will know. And so, yeah, I actually, as an illustration agent, like it when they come to me and do that, because they can pay me more and they can pay me what my artists are worth.
Yeah. And bear in mind, this is if the publisher agrees these illustrations are needed for the story. A lot of adult titles don't get this treatment because it's an adult title and not a graphic novel. So it's normally not getting that kind of stuff. And why I usually see it more in like certain middle grades where they'll partially illustrate it. So it's not a chapter book, it's not a picture book, but there are some illustrations going through it. So bear in mind, this isn't just the author telling the publisher, I'd really like this in the book and I think it'd be cool. And the publisher being like, yes, let's go pay for it. Probably not going to happen that way. So if it's something that is necessary, say like you're doing a map or something like that, like those elements, that yes, the publisher covers that.
Yeah. And they also put it in the contract that you don't have any control over who they pick and who they, and what they do there, because that is going to be like, if they do a work for hire, that's going to be an element that they now own and they control that. So
they will consult you.
Yes.
Meaningful consultation.
Meaningful consultation. And they also put that in picture book contracts as well, that you don't have any control over who the publisher, that they're like, they will go out and do this and you will maybe have meaningful consultation. You may have approval. So, yeah.
Danny has a question, but it's funny because, so his question is, how come you have royalties when other industries have residuals, not royalties? But then it's also funny to me because like in tax purposes, royalties are not what we think of as royalties. And it becomes very confusing if you do your own taxes.
Why, for an industry that's based on licensing, do we not have a minimum floor guarantee? Sorry, I went to Licensing Expo recently and learned a lot. And I was like, why is publishing not paying a minimum floor?
Yeah, like, the answer is we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know. We just don't know.
We don't know. They'll just be like, we'll just pay over too much for this book. And then we either make it up or we don't. We'll eat the loss. But I'm like, no, just pay a reasonable price and then just pay me a minimum of this amount of money either every year if you make the money or not. That seems reasonable. and the other thing is royalties are always fun because in kid lit they're lower than in adult, and in picture books they're lower than in like YA. So that's the other area of specialty where we as agents know, because we work so often in that space. I've never done an adult deal. Seeing an adult royalty probably would scare me and make me fall out of my chair and be like, wow, that's a lot of money. I know my boss saw my picture book royalties for the first time and thought that we were being shortchanged. I was like, no, this is a great offer, actually. So
I'll chat with you later, Natasha.
Okay. Me not knowing anything about adult being like, they must be so big.
All right. This is a question. I think Jessica referenced it earlier. I've seen a lot of anxiety in writer circles about the idea of manuscript acceptance. So can you talk a bit about what that means and what kind of instances where a manuscript is not accepted?
So the like contractual definition of acceptance is something that, you know, we actually even try to get really specific in a contract sometimes and not just have it say like acceptance at the publisher's whim, that we want it to be that your manuscript has been accepted by the publisher. Sorry, I'm getting too far ahead of myself. It just means that the publisher has decided that you've finished edits and to an extent that now they can move from copy edited pages into like laying it out page by page without there having to be a huge amount of reorganization that would cost them a lot of money to then relay out those pages. also very tired.
going from the writing form to the typesetting form. We're moving into a different format now because we've done enough that if we change anything in the future, it'll be so minuscule, it's not going to screw this up.
Yeah. Another term they use like on the production side is if your book is being transmitted, that usually means they have accepted the manuscript and your acceptance payment will be triggered and sent to you.
Yes. I got myself in trouble one time. There was, and I say got myself in trouble, but there was one publisher that works differently than almost every publisher I work with. And they don't do acceptance when everybody else does, which is when your manuscript moves into copy editing. They do it at the very end of production when you're not making any more changes. And so like after first pass pages. And I remember being like, what?
Was that like a very highly designed, like, photo heavy, like kind of project? Because
I work in picture books, but now that I know that about this publisher, I've been like, so tell me, what is acceptance? And the contract people are just like, it's acceptance when it's accepted. And I'm like, but what does that mean? Trying to get them to define it. And they sometimes, even the contract people we're working with, don't really know how to define what acceptance is back to us. But knowing those quirks about the individual contracts can really help on our end to prep authors to be like, hey, you have this publisher, this is what this term means here. So
yeah. And on the adult side, it's if it's nonfiction and the author has like promised photos or graphs or something alongside their text, acceptance usually won't be given until those are in too. I've seen, yeah.
And another reason I don't like nonfiction.
Yeah. And then for like when something is an exception, I probably have never seen this happen in my career as an agent, mostly because I work a lot in fiction, but lately I've been doing a lot more graphic novel stuff and I've been selling on proposal. And we are sending in 8-page synopses that are basically the giant roadmap of the book. And that might be a situation where if the author went back to the project and decided, no, I don't actually like this roadmap that I did. I think I'm going to go off instead of going to visit, you know, Florida, I'm going to go up to the, you know, Washington State. And they're going to be like, no, this isn't the book we signed up. This is completely not the book we signed up. They might try to get the editor might try to give you notes to get you back on track, but they also might just be like, it's too much work and we're not going to invest in this. And that could be where you get told it's not accepted. And this is not acceptable unto us. So, because they have a lot of work to do and it's disrespectful also.
Just and that's to do when that you too. Make the money back.
Yeah.
Or but they'll say, like, you won't be paid anymore, but you can keep what we already paid yeah. you. But that's best case scenario.
But also, this is where your agent comes in and is like, no, we're not going off the path. Stick to your synopsis. Send your pages to me before you send them to your editor. Let's see what you got here. This is when your agent is maybe a little more hands-on and is just making sure things are going well, or, you know, you talk to them about your stress level, things like that. We're more than just your contract people. We're also here for, like, sorting out feelings and things like that.
No, this is where we slap your hand and say, don't poke the bear.
Hey, sometimes people have anxieties and I talk them through that. So
that's true. I do that too.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily like slap the bear. It's more like, no, you did a great story. Stick with the story we did. Trust what you've done. You did really well. You know, it's that fear. It's that internalized mm-hmm. fear of like, it's not good enough. And it's like, no, it's great. Trust that they bought the great book. So
yeah, I feel like most of the time when I've seen anxieties and in writer circles about acceptance, it's not any different from like most other writers' anxieties, where it's where they're doing revisions and they're like, did I break this book when I was doing my revisions? And usually the answer is no, but they're like, what if the publisher doesn't like it? Blah, blah. So yeah.
And I don't know about on the children's side, but on the adult nonfiction side, depending on the type of book, sometimes I have authors who are delivering chapter by chapter and getting editor notes chapter by chapter, so that when delivery date comes around, acceptance is actually much closer because they've already been through most of the book with the editor, and there's the anxiety is sort of alleviated because they've had that process, like time to process that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think like also one of my authors put it best, like as agents, we're the paramedic that gets you to the hospital for the surgeon to work on you. Trust also that these editors know their job. They know how to. This is publishing. You can't break anything here. It's books. Nobody's gonna die because of we made some books and in the bookmaking process. But at the end of the day, like trust them. If you're feeling like you're going off the rails, call them and say, hey, I think I'm hitting a block. Can we talk through that edit note? Can we talk about this? They are probably more than happy to do that. That's probably going to help them down the line to talk through an edit now versus getting a manuscript that they're looking at going, wow, this really went wrong somewhere and I'm going to have to spend a week trying to get it back on. So communication, I think anytime you're feeling anxious, communicate. Just communicate. So,
yeah, that's a really good note. I'm glad you said that because we talk a lot about like how agents or how authors are like scared to ask their agent stuff. And I'm always like, just ask them. And that was another reason why I wanted to do this, because I feel like there are so many things where it's like authors are afraid to ask what different contract team
turns. I am so terrifying. I have a felt wreath hanging on my closet. We're not terrifying beasts. We're book nerds just like everybody else. And we're probably really excited to talk about projects and fangirl about them and be like in the weeds saying like, ooh, what about this idea? What about this idea? And then also like we get nervous too. Half of publishing is anxious and we all understand the imposter syndrome. So talk your feels out with us.
Yep. Okay. We're all nerds too.
Yeah. And there are no stupid questions, because I think we can all agree that no publisher has the same answer to anything. Everyone sort of does everything their own way. So if you're confused, it's probably for a good reason.
And all agents know how murky the industry is for writers. Like there's so little y'all can find. So agents are literally here to be like, well, here's the encyclopedia. And this is what we know about this. So definitely ask questions.
Cal had a question a while back and I wouldn't give my answer first, because this is actually how I found my agent. If a publisher accepts my book, will I be okay then going to an agent? And so I got my offer from a publisher before my agent. Do not query publishers at the same time you're querying agents. But I had several fools out with agents, and I knew someone at the publisher and they had specifically asked to see the book and then they offered on it. And so I contacted the agents who had fulls and partials and I think queries, and just said, I have an offer from a publisher. Would you be interested? Right. And I ended up getting two agent offers, and But the conversation my agent had with me was, and it wasn't, I don't feel like it was a deal breaker either way, but she asked me, are you set on taking the offer from the publisher? And anyway, that was a big conversation, but you need to be prepared to answer that question. If you've already signed the contract, that you've put the agent in a really hard spot and they're probably not going to be there. But yeah, so that's how I got my agent. Anything y'all want to add on that?
That's actually how I signed my last three clients, is they all had offers and they notified me of them. I will add, I agree with Sarah. When you already have an offer, I personally find it unethical to keep sending the book out if there's an offer on deck. So it really does become a question of, do we walk away from this offer, or we can sub it to the doors that have been closed to you previously, or do we move forward with the cards you've been dealt? For a lot of my clients, they were really excited about the offer on deck, and they were like, we can do that for the next book and moving forward, just limit it, don't get an option, all of this, which is a fine plan. But it does, like I said, ethically, I'm not going to hurt your future relationships and my relationships to send it out to a person and say, hey, look, this book already has an offer. You didn't get to see it here. Take a look for a week. So it feels bad to me.
Yeah.
This is the danger of, if you're sending to a bunch of small presses, which normally if you're doing that, I mean, you are doing that because big fives like don't take non-agented writers. This is the danger if you're sending out a bunch of submissions like that, as well as sending out submissions to agents, because if you do get an offer and you come and notify us and it's a very small press and we know it doesn't sell amazingly there, or we know you're not going to get, like if it's like a no advance place where you're going to like immediately start with royalties and we know that they don't have that marketing ploy others do, you might get a pass just because the agent's like, this may be a lot of work and for no comeback. If you've already signed the contract, we don't have anything to do with this. So we might be like, come back to me with your next book. But at the same time, I'm saying if you have an offer for publishing, you could totally go to agents and be like, even just queries, partials, fulls, and let them know, hey, I have an offer. Here is the name of the publisher. Give us that name, because if you don't give it to me, then I'm going to ask you, then I'm going to have to go research them, and like it's going to take longer for one. But give the name right off the bat. And they will ask you, are you set on staying with these people? And they'll give you their opinion. If they really think you have a better book than what is being offered to you, they might be like, we think you should walk away from this and we want to represent you and send it out to other places. But as Natasha said, it might be a bit unethical for them to be like, let's keep this on the stove and then send it out, because that's also bad business dealing with that editor.
And I would just say, if you do get offers in before you're agented, just be careful in the way you respond to them. You know, try not to say like yes in an email, even if you're excited and you want to be like, yes, this makes me excited. They may, if they feel like you have agreed to the terms they've given you when your agent, you do get an agent, it will make it harder to negotiate those terms to be better, even if you do want to stay with them.
Yeah, definitely. I love this offer, and like I'm currently have submissions out with agents, so please give me such and such amount of time while I notify them. Don't ever say, yes, this is great, I'm getting an agent, so I'm going to do this, this, and this. Because if you agree to whatever they just put in that email, when we get the contract, we can't negotiate anything that was in that email.
Yep.
So we can't get you a better advance. We can't get you better royalties. So don't say yes.
When I got the offer from the publisher, I said, I have queries, or I have fulls out with agents. Do you mind if I contact them and get back to you in 2 weeks? And they said, that's fine. And any reputable publisher, by the way, will say that's fine. If they push back against that, that's a red flag. And then also from the author side, when you're talking to agents, pay attention to what they're saying about the book, because my agent was so excited about my book and was like, just told me about the different elements that she loved in it and everything. And then the other agent that offered only wanted to know what the deal was. Like, I don't even know if they read the book, and it is an agent who's kind of known for that. So, so pay attention to what they're saying too, because you don't want an agent who's just going to sign you for like a quick deal.
It should be the same process you would go through, even if you didn't have an offer and you were talking to an agent, you still want to test the waters on the long-term relationship.
Yeah. All right. We have 10 minutes left. So let's see what questions we can get through. That we had a question for you, Caitlin, if you just want to answer real quick. I know you're busy because you just opened inquiries again. What's your response time for requests for edits through strictly textual?
For freelancing, I'll get back to your email within a few days, and then we'll set an appointment where you know exactly when you're getting edits and when they're getting back to you and all that stuff. And it's usually about a 2-week turnaround time, depending if it's a full length. But you can just email me at strictlytextual@gmail.com, and I'll answer all your questions.
And Karen said, Sarah, when are you going to start taking clients? I don't know.
I can answer that. I can answer that. If you want to just query me at, and call out to Sarah directly, Sarah is reading in my query box and will be co-agenting with me for a few projects until they make some sales. And then at that point, they will be opening to their box. But they will be hunting in mine first as they learn the ropes.
I'm already hunting.
Yeah, you're already hunting me. Found a really good one already. So
all right. Let's see what questions I want to prioritize. Okay, here's a really good question because I think it's open-ended. What is something that you think most authors don't know that they that should or shouldn't be in their contracts?
I thought about this one ahead of time, so I'm going to just jump in, and I don't know that it's the most important thing, but because I've seen a range of like small presses through big five presses, you want to keep an eye and make sure you have an out of print clause that actually gives you the opportunity to walk away at a reasonable time. And an out of print clause just means that if the book is out of print, if the publisher doesn't have it in stock in stores, and you haven't sold a certain number of copies for a certain amount of time, then you can go to them and say, hey, can you please reprint my book? And if they say no, you should get to terminate your contract, get your rights back, and go either self-publish, like some people want to do, or find a new publisher to reprint your book.
Yeah, definitely. You want that termination clause, which states reasons you can terminate. So I've had contracts where it literally says nothing about how an author can terminate their contract. They're just stuck. I'm like, no, if the publisher's in breach, if, as Jessica said, it's out of print, which I always say, make sure it is print copies, physical copies, because ebooks can float around forever. I'll usually say, like, if it hasn't earned a certain amount of money per statement, because if you haven't earned over $150 and your statement's like semi-annually, there could be a problem there. So that's something you want to keep up with. And there should also be like an accounting clause saying you have the right to check the books and a certain amount a year. Usually it's like one or two times a year. And if it's incorrect to a certain percentage in favor of the publisher, they will cover the costs of that and pay you back the diff, like what they have messed up on.
I'm having such a hard time with this because there's like several off the top
of
my head.
You're like, all of it.
I'm like, you got to make sure that your book is really well defined for non-compete. You got to do this for morality. So I'm actually going to answer this with two because I feel like these are the two that I'm seeing a lot more of. I've been seeing a lot more popping up in press, in contracts that are like, if the publisher deems this book not economically viable in the future, they can cancel this. And I'm like, dude, this is a risk business. No, like you made this bed, let's lie in it.
They can just be like, rockstar romances aren't hot anymore. We're going to cancel your book.
Yeah, kind of. Or like, hey, or as I quoted them, I was like, look, we're in a pandemic year with supply chain problems. Circle. So that if you that could be something you don't even realize you need to call out, because 2, 3, 4 years in the future. Yeah, exactly. We're predicting the book market 4 years in the future, 2 years in the future. The other thing is morality clauses, where it's open-ended, where it says if you offend a group of people, all I gotta say is there's political division, and this can be particularly problematic if you're a POC author and you're using your voice to uplift social justice issues, and you've now offended a whole Nazis. Segment of the internet. Yeah, Nazis. You've offended the Nazis.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah, you've offended the Nazis. It's going to hurt your book sales. They've all given it 1-star rating. Cancel your book contract. Like, no. So getting those things really taken care of is an important element for regardless if you have an agent or not. You need that taken care of. So
I will say as agents, we always just remember we are trying to get an agency clause in there that states how everyone's getting paid. Mm-hmm. So if the publisher is separating payments, sending author payments straight to them. Or...
Oh, you just reminded me of something I wanted to mention about agency clauses. You okay. also want to look at your agency clause, even if you like your agency. Some agents will tie into their agency clause that they get to represent your option. So if you leave your agent after book one and you have an option clause,
no.
guess which agent has to submit your option?
No, that's a bad idea.
Do you mean in the agency agreement or in the agency clause in a contract?
The agency clause in the publishing contract. That is in a number of agency clauses.
Seriously? I've never seen that.
I've seen it now in like three of them.
Holy crap. So, okay, yeah, don't want that.
Yeah, so
that happen.
Make sure you see it.
Make sure you see the contract once the agency clause has been added into it.
This is my advice for authors even before you go. At that point, when you're talking to an agent, ask for the agency clause that will go into the publisher's contract when you're getting your author contract, and ask for your agent's agency contract that they have.
Yes.
Because you want to know what happens if your agent leaves the agency. Because what I found out with my contract, my lawyer gave me this advice, which I think is the best advice ever from any lawyer ever. Sometimes a contract will have rules in one, like what happens if the agency goes bankrupt, that is not in the other contract. Mm. And you might need to bring it into your contract. Mm. So feel free to ask. Worst they can say is nope.
Yeah. So definitely look at that. This is a stupid one, but I always make sure it's in there. Copies of books you get for free. How many you get and how many your agent get. There was one clause. I was so pissed off. My client luckily got, you know, like 10 copies of the final product or whatever. And then it said agent will get copy if there's a second printing. And I was like,
that's so weird.
I was like, excuse me. And this is for a graphic novel. I was like, excuse me. I don't even care if I just get one copy. But I need that for, you know, my shelf here or to market myself and show like my body of work to people or to editors. And
not to mention like foreign rights and film people and like.
Right. I need the physical copy to show them if I go to a meeting or something to be like, here's what the work is. Here's what it looked like. And then like instead of going out to a bookstore and being like, I need to buy my client's book, please.
Yeah, I recently learned like one of my books, they're no longer going to make the paper for it because the printer decided they don't like that. And I was like, treasure this first edition forever. Never given it up. Yeah. We always need that. And also like, if you're getting only 5 copies as an author, that's not enough.
Yeah, as an author, you should definitely be getting more. Usually they'll ask you how many as an author would you like? I always ask my client that when it comes to the copies, I'd be like, how much do you logically think you're going to need? Cause like one of my clients was like, I don't need many. I'll do like 15 or something. And the other one was like, I need like 25, 30. Cause I have a big family.
So. I think ideally we aim for like 50, but I usually end up with like 25, 30 area.
It's definitely around 20 with me. Usually. And as an agent, I only ask for 5. Cause then I'm like, what the hell do I do?
Yeah. I think the agency rule at Tobias is now 10. We have to do 10. So like, I think
we went off on a tangent there, but I just feel like that.
It's fine. I mean, don't get me wrong. I could talk to you all for hours. Don't get me wrong. I'm like, happy to do this.
There was something Caitlin mentioned that I want to expand it upon because it happens a lot in romance small press, which there are a lot of writers who write for small presses in romance who don't have agents. And a lot of those publishers are electronic only or ebook first. And the out of print clause is then obviously there's no print copy, so you can't define by print copies available, but you want it to be monetary value, not number of copies. Because what I've seen publishers do when they don't want to give up a book, they'll run a 99-cent sale on it and then and do a promo, and then they've sold so many copies and they don't have to give the rights back.
Or you're doing print on demand, then they'll just print the necessary number to get to that number, and they'll be print on demand. Okay, giveaway. Like, yeah. I printed them. They're out there. I just didn't sell them.
All right, Jess, we actually just talked about morality clauses a little bit ago, so if you missed that, you may want to rewind. And last question, because I know that Jessica wanted to talk about this. If an author is looking to sign a publishing contract and they don't have or they don't want an agent, what advice do you have for them?
Entertainment lawyer.
Entertainment lawyer or contract lawyer, but entertainment, somebody who knows publishing law.
Yeah. If you absolutely can't find either of those or afford either of those, there are agents like myself who freelance and we offer contract consultations. I would suggest that being after you like try to find those lawyers, because they're going to be your best bet. They are your
strongest. And Jessica has a really good tip for how to find one of those lawyers.
Mm-hmm. Wait, because, I do?
Yeah, you said in the email. I don't want to take your thunder.
So this is a suggestion. I do think that finding an entertainment lawyer who has looked at a publishing contract before, don't just get any entertainment lawyer, because if they haven't seen a publishing contract, they'll probably die on the spot. But the Authors Guild, if you want to pay the fee to join the Authors Guild, they will review your contract for you and send back notes. They also have this would be the best available contract out there form you can look at. I haven't actually looked at it in detail, so I can't say whether or not I like it or not. I
definitely say it does not adhere to a lot of the contracts.
Okay. Yeah. And the only other thing I will add about the contract lawyers and publishing is they will do a conflicts check, because they represent publishers. Mm-hmm. So my particular lawyer also represents Macmillan and another agency. And so there was a moment when it was like, hey, if you're going to get an offer from that agency, I can't review that contract. Like, I got to step aside. Somebody else, the company has to do that for you. So they will do a conflicts check, and you might get referred to somebody else if there is a conflict.
Yeah. All right. Cool. So that is all the time we have. Thank you all so much for tuning in for the last Pub Talk Live. I said before when I announced that it was ending, I may still do one-offs if I find someone interesting that I want to interview, but I won't be doing that second and fourth Saturday going forward, because I need to sleep sometimes. And thank you all so much for watching, and everyone stay safe, wash your hands, wear a mask. See you next time. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.
If you're enjoying this show, please check out my other podcast, Queries, Qualms, and Quirks. Queries, Qualms, and Quirks asks published authors to share their successful query letter and discuss their journey from first spark to day of publication. I interview authors of all genres about how they got started writing, getting their book deal, and their experiences with publication. Search for it on your favorite podcast app.